You're listening to episode number 9 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everybody. I'm really happy to have you as part of the show, and I'm glad that you're part of this journey of mentoring developers, learning from them, teaching everybody, and creating an environment where everybody can thrive and succeed. And you've listened to my interviews with famous people, people who are well-known, they're speakers, like Derek Bailey in episode 3. And I've interviewed new developers that have gotten their first jobs and they're trying to establish themselves, like Pavlo Grudzinko, that's episode 5. I've also spoken with a budding entrepreneur who's barely out of college and started a company, that's in episode 4. But now I want to bring to you a regular senior developer who works at a regular company. Nothing fancy, nothing too striking, and definitely not famous, but really accomplished in his own right. So I want to bring to you regular people, and we can learn from their experience. How did they get into programming? What do they think about it? Is this a good career for new developers? And also, if they have had a chance to mentor others and take their opinions on mentorship. So I think it's very important to have a mix of people that you know and people that you don't know. And I think you'll enjoy this episode. So without further ado, here's my guest for today, David Enan. Today we're with David Enan. David, tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm a software developer. Been chewing on this stuff for a while, so I mean.
So, as you know, this is a podcast about mentorship. Idea is to find out what are the concerns and what are the difficult issues that new developers or up and coming developers face, and then to see what can we do to make it easier for them? So from the point of view of somebody who has to deal with them, perhaps a mentor like yourself or perhaps an employer, you'd want to know, what are we doing wrong? What can we improve to make their experiences better and to enrich their development careers?
So, quite right.
So I think that you mentioned that you had some ideas about that.
And absolutely.
And that you were... And I'm really interested in hearing your ideas. So tell me about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? How do you define yourself?
Well, I like to think of myself as a creator. I love to organize things, put them together, make cool things happen. When I'm building software, I'm building robots that process data and reformat things. It's all about making something new, all about, really trying to smooth that interface between people and data and their machines, you know, leverage that ability for computers to do all that busy work for us.
That's amazing. So you're not somebody who's building websites. You're not somebody who's building test tools, or you're not writing this high level code. You're basically building code that runs in the hardware. So can you be considered an embedded programmer?
Not so much. I'm middleware, I think would probably be the best way to describe it. I'm not building a website as in I'm coding the web page. I'm not building a database as in, you know, like programming an engine. I'm working with the data models. I'm defining transports and APIs. I'm building the API, testing the APIs, when you do something with Ajax on your website, it hits an API, and there's got to be something that happens in the background asynchronously, comes back to you eventually. All that kind of design is what I work on.
Okay, so we talked about APIs, and we talked about Ajax. There might be people in the audience that don't know these terms. So
sure.
How would you define those terms within 30 seconds?
Well, API is very simple application programming interface, which comes down to the basic set of rules by which two pieces of code are interacting. You can think of it as a contract. You agree to send this information, we agree to accept this information and return appropriately. API and Ajax is the asynchronous JavaScript mode of doing that kind of connection, kind of API. It's like the triggered transport for that uses those rules that are defined.
Right. So if I can define Ajax, I would probably define it as a method in which a web page can update portions of itself or the entirety of the contents. It can update its contents without doing a reload, a full reload.
That is a much more user-centric view of that. But yes, it is accurate.
Very nice. So how did you first encounter programming? What was your first experience? How did you discover that?
Well, I was fiddling with this manual that many people of my era have faced from Commodore 64 that introduces Commodore 64 BASIC and how it works and gives you some example programs to put in and chew on. And I had played with that as the very first thing I ever did with a computer. Literally.
How old were you at that time?
I couldn't have been more than 12. Back in those days, it was 80s. I never got a lot of ability to play with it much, but I had a few weeks in there, and that was like the first exposure. Then later, I knew that IBM PCs were coming up, and when I actually got my own computer some years later, it was a Tandy 1000, which is
cool
for the old.
So you played So you played with a lot of the computers that were coming out. Those were intended to be I don't want to say tampered with, but they were intended to be tweaked and just like you have, some other computers like the Raspberry Pi these days, they're trying to recreate that environment. So you encountered programming as a child, and did you continue working on programs? Did you continue doing software development as you got older, or then you broke away from it and then you picked it up later?
Well, I pretty much did when I had the opportunity to play with it more. I always had some kind of a project going. We did a mailing label program that we built in BASIC. GW BASIC wasn't adequate to the data size that we were dealing with, so we moved it to Turbo Pascal. And that took me into college. By the time we were done with that, I had some ideas to make some services that used pricing information from newspapers to try and give people where is the best deal on their groceries. And I played with hammering on that for a while. I never made anything of it, but goes to show, much like today, where I keep working on things, I have more ideas than I have time to work on, which is why mentorship is so important.
Yeah, I think that's important because what you're describing is the fact that you have a passion for software development, and it wasn't a job for the length of your interest in programming. You were doing it anyway, and whether you have a job doing it or not, you would still have done it. So I think that's important, have that passion, and that you learn different things. You make mistakes. I'm sure you made tons of mistakes, and you did things badly, and then you learn, oh, there's a better way, and then you kept learning. And the continuous learning, I think, is going to be key for any new developer. What do you think?
Absolutely. The idea, I've seen people get very frustrated with, oh, I did something wrong, I feel stupid. I'm like, you won. You figured something out. You learned something you didn't know before. You win over and over again every time you fix an error. It's a happy process, not a, oh, I'm stupid. It's like, oh, look, cool, I figured that out. Level up.
So when you went into college, did you actually study computer science or computer engineering?
I wasn't focused on software at that point. I went into a program called computer technology that focused more on the how computers work, all the way from the basic electronics, like how do you build a gate, what is a gate made out of, and how does it work, all the way up to this is how you interface with microprocessors and program them. We even did some C programming and some Modula 2. This was back before Java was even a thing. So it was it focused a lot on how things work, but without having that modern computer science focus that's on data structures and algorithms and stuff like that. That wasn't part of what we were doing. We were doing very structured, very solve this problem sorts of issues.
Right. And so do you ever wonder if you would have been better off doing a computer science degree?
Only when I'm talking to doctorates in computer science or masters or bachelors or generally the rather admittedly smart people who work at places like Amazon and Cisco. And it's not that I find it to be a particular handicap, not that I haven't run up against my limits, but it's not a particular handicap that I don't understand algorithms and data structures as well as a computer scientist. In fact, I think that it puts me in a position where I'm not as worried about the fact that I'm not doing low-level data structure building and programming. I don't know much about it, and it's not important. I'm solving business problems, and solving business problems doesn't require you to know how to build a B-tree and balance it. It's irrelevant. But when you try to get a job at a place like that, they're going to ask you that question in the interview and be somewhat puzzled when you have no clue.
So you mentioned that there are some subjects that are taught in perhaps computer science schools and like algorithms, data structures, other complicated things that are not that common. But you're saying that it's valuable when you're doing interviews. I also wonder if it's valuable to have a degree, not just the knowledge, because you can get the knowledge, but getting a degree is a hard thing. I wonder if ever somebody came to you during your interviews and one of the interviewers said, you don't have that degree, you're not so sure.
Well, I like to stand on my technical expertise because I do know a lot of things. At least at this point, it doesn't seem to matter much. And when it does matter, you know, I can flip them off. You don't think I'm good enough, then...
Well, that's right now when you have the experience. When you were getting your first job, do you think you already had experience at that time?
I think that I was more humble at that point, to the point where I wasn't trying to be a programmer. I was trying to be an administrator. I was trying to be a service person who helps maintain the computers, which is computer technology. That's what it's for. Let's maintain and make sure these things work. The program was designed for someone who would theoretically be fixing them, like a television, but that didn't turn out to be how the technology evolved. But I ended up going deeply into administration. My entry into tech was software testing and then network administration, system administration. I only got really into programming professionally when I decided I needed to make a program to help me do my job as a tool.
That's nice. Yeah. So the interesting part, I think, for the audience is that you didn't get a job as a programmer. You got a job as doing something else, something that perhaps you were qualified for, perhaps you had, at least in the eyes of the interviewer, you were a good fit. And then
I was able to talk myself into the job, at least.
Yes. And it may have been harder for you to go into a software engineer role right away, but then you were able to switch roles. This is another thing I think is valuable for people to know, that you can do that. You don't have to have your first job out of college or out of high school as a programmer or a software developer. Perhaps you can do testing, and a lot of people can do testing if they have analytical skills. They don't necessarily need to have coding skills, and they can develop coding skills over time. If there's an open position, they can move into that. And like you said, you showed people that you could code by doing some, you know, solving your problem using a program that you wrote, and probably people saw that and said, well, you know, you can code, why don't you join us in the development team? Is that true?
It wasn't quite that simple, but in the end, it turned it up that way. I stayed in at least partial service jobs, kind of administrator and DevOps and type positions for many years before I was doing pure software. And even when I was doing pure software, I wasn't like trying to program an engine. I was programming what they called programmer analyst work. Look at the problem and devise a configuration that will help our existing software solve it. And just built it up through that. I think starting without that degree, starting without all that knowledge of computer science, really let me get a lot of years of experience and perspective in working a series of jobs that get there. I often find myself totally kicking butt when it comes to doing DevOps, system administration, network stuff, because I know this stuff backwards and forwards. I've been doing it for many years, and the computer science guys, like, I've been programming compilers for the last 5 years. He doesn't know anything about networking.
Yeah, I think this is valuable. You mentioned DevOps. Okay. I think this is a new term that's coming into focus in the last few years. And it's about being able to do multiple things, isn't it? Is being able to write code and write a program and also maybe perhaps do network maintenance or get, you know, do some other types of work that's not strictly programming, but do whatever it takes to get the job done, whether it's a database, whether it's a network, right?
You don't have to be a database performance tweaker, but you do have to know how to start and restart the database, how to maybe run the tending functions of it. You know, you're doing the integration work of making all these technologies come together. And as we get more and more service-oriented architectures going on, it's more and more about seeing all these pieces go together and being able to operate with them comfortably.
So when you started your first job as a software developer, at that point, was there any program in that organization which took you from not knowing maybe a lot of, you know, what goes on to, you know, just taking you from that position to being really good at it? Or did they say, okay, you're now a programmer, here it is, go and write some code?
I think it comes down to being on a team. And they lay out the structure. You know, this is what we're trying to accomplish. These are the pieces that we've broken down. What do you think you can handle? And, you know, each person saying, oh, I'll be good at that. I'll be good at that. And when I see, you know, the pieces that have to do with networking, that have to do with, you know, we wrote a virus scanning email appliance. One of the components of that is a multi-queue email transmission system that manages the flows of all these emails. And I was like, I can do that. I know I can do that. It's not, you know, exactly programming, but it's part of this product and it needs done. And, you know, I'm the guy on the team who's going to work on it. I got more and more, and although I may have had the title of a programmer at that point, I was still finding my place in the team, you know, fitting myself in to the system, to the operations.
So how long did it take for you to get from that place where you're trying to find your place to being accepted and valued in the team, in your company? We'll ask about the community later, but how long did that take you? Was it a few months, a few years?
Oh, years. We're talking probably 5 to 7 years before I got to the point where I felt like there were people who were looking up to me and saying, you know, oh, you're a good programmer. You have a lot of good ideas. You know, what do you think the architecture should be here? That kind of thing.
So what do you think about the idea of when you have a new software developer in the team, that there is a formal apprenticeship program or a formal onboarding program where they identify all the different skills the person needs and gives you the chance to work with a mentor, somebody who actually cares about your career and tries to bring you up to speed and answers your questions, allows you to work with him together as a programming pair, as we say. And would that have been better for you?
It's an interesting question. I am. Would it have been better? Maybe. I think there's a degree of push and investment, right? Because by the time you get to the point of, you know, actually caring about someone, their career, you've got to have this level of investment. And I've spent a lot of years being a contracting programmer. Not like every third job tends to be a permanent job that lasts a bit longer, but I'll do several stints, 6 or 9 months at a place. And they don't really commit to you that way. They're like, yeah, you know stuff, make this happen. Here, fix these bugs, you know, stuff like that. But they're not going to, you know, sit down with you and say, oh, I care about your career. In order to get that, you'd have to have a personal connection, at least making friends. And in terms of as someone who wants to have a mentor, if someone pursues trying to be mentored, I'm more than happy to help them. You know, I want people to understand this stuff. I'm depressed often that so few seem to understand what I understand.
Yeah.
But I haven't been like, you know, told by the manager, okay, your role is now to mentor this fella here. You know.
How about, what if I become your manager tomorrow and I say, okay, David, from tomorrow, I would like you to be a mentor for all of the new recruits that are coming in this year. How would you feel about that?
I would be quite excited. There's a lot of opportunity there to make some pretty awesome stuff happen. I would have to start organizing, spin up a mind map and figure out ideas for mentoring. As I've come up, I came through all this networking information, all this administration information, and it doesn't seem like it's really programming related, but like a guy who does Java knows how to use his IDE, you know, the guy who builds a network application, he got to kind of know the network. The ability to be able to tell someone, go and make this, do this task. And yes, I know you don't know how to do it. And yes, program it. And yes, I know you don't know how to do it. And we're probably going to take the code you write and throw it away. But it's okay.
Yeah, so you know that code is not as valuable as people make it seem. Is the process that you go through to produce that code. And a lot of times, as you're aware, we would completely throw away our own code and rewrite it because a year later, 2 years later, we know better. We have better information and we maybe are more skilled and maybe different using a different programming language. So it's completely okay to throw away code, but new developers, for them, it's harder to do because they hold it close to their heart because it's their baby, but it's not really like that.
So, and that's one of the things that the mentor, I think of him as the college professor, needs to ingrain in them is that it's okay. And we're going to lose this information and you'll be able to recreate it twice as fast, twice as good, because you have a better idea now of how it works and how it's supposed to happen.
So my goal for asking that question to see how you'd feel about having this mentorship program is to see, what do you think it should look like? I mean, should it be a 6 month long thing? Just pair with me, work with on the projects that I have, and I will show you how I'm doing work so you learn from me. Or is it going to be 1 month or 2 weeks or eight weeks off? This is basically a classroom environment where I'm going to teach you and you learn from me. Or it could be, these are the set of resources. Just go read it. If you have a question, let me know.
I think I would like to see something more like a class project structure where, you know, me and four people I'm mentoring are going to try and build something. We may or may not succeed entirely, but like a team at MIT who sits down and builds a robot, we're going to sit down and try and build this software. My role as mentor is to give them ideas and maybe run them away from really bad ideas, but I still want them to make mistakes too. So that's the challenge, right? Which mistakes should I let them make? You know, do I need to be taking notes constantly about how to go back and discuss it with them about what choices they made and what might have been better.
Yeah. Okay. So imagine I'm a new developer, or maybe I am somebody who's in high school or is going through college, but not really sure what to do in my career or what career to choose. So I have a couple of choices. I can do software development. I can do accounting, perhaps. I can go to medical school. I can do a few things. How will you rate software development as a career for that person? On a scale of 1 to 10, where do you see it?
I see it as probably an 8. But I also want to say things like, a software developer that fully understands accounting is going to earn multiple millions of dollars in his career. You know, this is the kind of skill combination that really makes things valuable. If you understand medical study data manipulation from doing research in the medical field, and you know computer science, so you can build programs to work with that stuff, you got a job for a very long time, very profitable. Software development itself is kind of a pure thing, is much harder to make something of than to combine it with something else. You worked in the trucking industry doing paperwork for your dad. Go learn to be a programmer, because there's software out there you can write that'll make logistics so much better.
You know? Yeah. So one option would be to, if you're interested in accounting but you're also interested in programming, how about you study accounting but do programming on the side to learn it? You don't need a computer science degree. And then you have the domain knowledge, and you can apply your technical knowledge to solve problems within that domain. And then, as you said, you can get jobs. Perhaps you can start your own company and solve that problem yourself and try that.
Absolutely. It's those combinations that really make magic.
Okay. So if you could start over, what would you do differently as a new developer? Is there anything you would do different?
Yes. So I have this idea. It's a pretty big idea, so I'm not quite sure how much time we have. There's a program out there called Rocky's Boots. It's old school. I mean, we're talking pre-Commodore days, so Apple, early Apple stuff. It is an educational program that teaches you industrial automation techniques through a kind of a pseudo-graphical user interface. It's a language. It allows you to program things visually in a way that's entirely logic-based. It's not syntax-based. Our programs have evolved from machine code. Machine code has a very specific procedural paradigm of changing values in a mutating values repeatedly. It's how our program computers work. And that's great for micros, because that's how we program them. They're very small and they're very good at changing states. What we want to do is program logic, because we have logic in our business systems. We have logic in our management. We have all these layers of procedure in logic in business processes. I want to teach people from the start to think of this problem as a logic problem. Whether it happens to be expressed in JavaScript or Perl or Java or C or Go or who cares, it doesn't matter, because the actual base logic flow can and should be identical. We're not making a different idea. We're trying to say we need to cohesively manage our logic structures from management and requirements collection all the way down to the very primitive bits of the system. If I was starting over, I'd want to start with the idea of, we build tools that do syntax. We build tools that help us manage our logic. We're not going to be mucking through code files and misplacing semicolons. We have tools to do that. We will be much more efficient and much more capable if we can start with our logic and not have to worry about those details that we're basically set up to fail on.
Interesting. So tell me, I didn't talk to you about the importance or non-importance of being connected to a developer community or developers community. Do you go to user groups? Do you go to conferences? Do you reach out to others?
Yes. Not a whole lot. I do tend to be kind of here in my basement trying to work on things a lot. But I do. I've gone to a number of different user groups, Perl user groups usually, as that's my main expertise. I have a very exciting thing going on, Swiss Perl Workshop here 2015 on the 27th, 28th, 29th of August. I'm actually going to do a presentation with another Perl fellow about a huge idea that I've been working on that isn't even the huge idea I just explained. So, and it's a big opportunity. I'm really excited about that. So I have trouble explaining the scope of my ideas. That one I just tried to explain is big enough because it involves basically not programming the way we program. And that's really hard to talk to programmers about. They get nervous. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and my job would not be doing that. It's doing something else.
So what do you think about the, you know, when you go to user groups, do you think that it's important for people to go meet people, promote themselves essentially, put themselves out there? Because, you know, you're out there presenting. Yeah, and you're probably volunteering, so the people get to know you. Is that important?
Yes. It's about ideas and sharing in that respect. If you go to a bunch of user group meetings, you're going to hear ideas that you hadn't thought about before. It'll be very interesting, at least if you're the sort of curious person who likes to explore ideas, and I hope you are if you're going to program computers.
Yeah, so you're exploring ideas, but you're not going there to promote yourself so that people know that you're good at Perl, so they might, you know, come to you with jobs or contracts. That's not why you're doing this.
That's a reason a lot of people show up, and it is a motivating factor. It's like being hungry causes you to show up where there's food. Well, you're going to go to the Perl user group if you are desperate for work because you need to connect with as many people as possible. You can kind of tell which ones are like that because they kind of have this hunger in their eye and they're not focusing on the cool, nifty things that are going on. You know, we're having a code kata and they're kind of like, they'd rather talk to people. They'd rather, you know, tell people I'm looking for work and I'm good at this.
So you're coming at it from the point of view that probably not the best thing to do. And you would rather people focus on the technologies.
I would, but I'm also got to admit some realism. You do need a job. So, So I'd say if you want people to want you around, you want to be as engaged, enthusiastic, and interesting as possible. You're going to get more response for pairing with somebody and doing a code kata in an interesting way than you are for talking to them and shaking their hand and saying, yeah, I'm looking for work. It's like, if you want people to want you around, you got to be awesome. So go to the user group meeting, be awesome, have ideas. And that means you got to not just think about it while you're at the user group meeting. You got to think of things other times. If you can't sit down and talk for 2 hours on the things that you've been learning and exploring and finding out, maybe you should go learn and explore some, find some more things out.
So the point is that if you work hard and if you're genuine, then people will like you. And if they like you, then they are likely to remember you. And when they come across a job opening or something else, that they might think of you. But they won't think of you if they think that they don't really know you enough. They don't know what you can do because you're nice, but that's not enough.
The number one way to get on a team is to mesh with the guys. I mean, you can't see me on the podcast, but you see me. I walked into a room full of people to interview me. They all looked like me. It was a shoo-in for the job. I'm like, I'm qualified, and I look exactly like all the other guys. I'm hired.
That's good. So, I think it's important for people to, you know, just connect with people and participate in coding exercises like katas. Katas is just a coding exercise. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're getting towards the end of our discussion here, but there are just a few questions that I would like to ask just to get an idea of what you think about those things. Quick answers, 30-second answers.
Okay.
Do you read blogs?
I do. I tend to read Tech Dirt in terms of blogs. My Twitter feed is kind of a blog. So when it comes to – I'm listening to more podcasts these days. As you can see, this is always a good way because I can do that while I walk my dogs and such. I'm listening to the NPR podcasts, BBC podcasts. There's Dog Year, Read Dog Year.
So you're diversified. You're not just focusing on technical things. You're just like, you want to know, this is how you get your information, maybe news.
Oh, yeah, I get news and interesting articles and, progressive media. I love Best of the Left podcast. That's just so much good stuff in there. And because there's more important in life than just programming, too, you know?
Right. So you have to have a balanced outlook so that you're not always talking about, you're not always thinking about programming. But in terms of, you know, getting ahead in my career, let's say that I'm a new developer and I want to get ahead, do you think podcasts or screencasts or blogs, are they a valid avenue? Or you think that, you know, it's for some other people, just, you know, read books and just do the work. That's another way.
I see it as about ideas and interactions. Get on Reddit, you know, get on Stack Overflow, answer some questions. If you don't know the answers, go find out the answers. Maybe you don't have an answer for them, but you'll figure it out yourself. That's a good thing.
Nice. Okay, so what's the best advice you can give to software shops, you know, employers looking to hire new developers?
Commit to a developer and show it. Don't pretend like the current market ambient contracts are good enough. You know, make a European contract. Say, we're going to hire you, and if we fire you, we're going to give you a month's salary when you leave. You know, tell us that you care and show it with a legal document, because this at will fire you when you want, whenever you want, and you can quit when no notice at all stuff is it's really demotivating. It shows that the company really doesn't care, and you got to invest. Send us to conferences, you know, host things like these get-togethers. You know, really try and put yourself out there as somebody who's trying to make life interesting for your developers.
I think this is excellent advice.
Let us know how we are doing by tweeting at us at Mentoring Devs. And if you are enjoying the show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Now, let's get back to the show.
So, David, what's the best advice you can give to new and aspiring developers?
You want to learn how. You want to learn why. You want to find how to hack your own coding to make it go faster. You want to explore test-based development. You want to try and find out where the computer can help you do this work better. Make your environment, if you feel like you're doing something tedious, there's probably a machine code to do it. So figure out how to make the machine do it for you.
So basically you don't sit and wait for things to happen. Go out and look for better solutions. And ask people who know and get involved with the community and be proactive. Is that kind of the gist? Great.
Yep, be proactive. Try to have ideas and think of things. And if you don't have ideas, find people with interesting ideas and help them with those.
I think this was a pretty good interview. I think people will probably get a lot out of it. And from your unique experiences, I'm really hoping that people, that new developers and aspiring developers are going to benefit from this interview.
I hope so.
So before we go, is there anything you'd like to promote? Do you want to show people or tell people where and how they can get in touch with you?
Well, sure. My email is davidenan@gmail.com. Just smushed all together. I'm sure this podcast will have my name spelled in it for you, so I won't go into that. I have a GitHub. My GitHub username is DavidIM, as is my Paws username. That's the Perl distribution system. On GitHub, I have my Replay project. That's what I've been spending and working at building for so long, for like 5 years now. It's a really big idea. It's complicated to explain and simple in its execution and the problems it tries to solve. So if you really want to learn about something interesting, then you can always go look at that.
Fantastic. So we did talk about GitHub, and GitHub is this kind of a social network or a place where you can put your code, let other people see it and work off of it, and you can see other people's code. It's kind of a place that you'd want to hang out if you want to share software and code.
True. Yeah, if you're on an open source project and you're going to help develop, GitHub is probably where the code is going to be. It's got a lot of tools that help manage code too, so it's more than just social thing. It's really a industrial class code management tool.
Amazing. So GitHub is something that you want to be familiar with. Go to github.com. If you want to start out and search for the technologies, maybe the programming languages, maybe domains, anything you like, and you'll find people have submitted code, and you can start contributing. So thank you, David. It was great meeting you, and hopefully we'll get you back together later on this podcast, and then we can talk about your experiences mentoring people at that time.
Sure.
All right.
Be happy to.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.